For Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, December 20th, 2017. And on this day, a proposed exemption that would allow guns on school grounds in Maine in certain circumstances, and a hot new board game from right here in Maine. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you. And by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins says two health care bills she wanted in exchange for her vote in favor of the massive GOP tax overhaul bill that passed today will not be considered until next year. Her announcement raises further questions about whether Collins has the leverage and the votes to get those bills through Congress. Steve Missler has more.
Collins voted for the GOP tax plan despite its repeal of the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate. That's because GOP leadership promised her a vote on her reinsurance bill and a vote on legislation to restore some payments to insurers. But Collins has now moved the timetable for Congress to consider the health care bills three times. In November, Collins told reporters in D.C. that the health care bills would likely be considered before final passage of the tax overhaul, thus strengthening her negotiating position.
I'm going to know whether or not those provisions made it, and that matters hugely to me.
But Collins' ability to secure those two proposals has been met with widespread skepticism, locally and nationally. Her agreements over the health care proposals were secured with the White House and Senate leader Mitch McConnell, but not with the GOP-controlled House. And some Republican House members signaled early on that they had no interest in passing bills that could shore up the ACA. Nevertheless, Collins told Maine Public Radio last week that she was confident the health care bills would be considered before the end of the year.
I believe that the agreements that I have were made in good faith and will be kept. And obviously, if I'm proven wrong, there will be consequences.
But Collins announced Wednesday that the proposals won't be considered until next year. That's because she withdrew a request that the bills get included in a spending bill that's supposed to pass by the end of this year to avoid a government shutdown. Collins says Democratic leaders balked at supporting it if her health care proposals were included. And she says she needs Democrats to pass the health care bills, too.
My two bills need 60 votes to pass in the Senate. The tax bill only needed 50 votes.
The delay has whipped up withering criticism of Collins' decision to support the tax overhaul. On Wednesday, the Maine Democratic Party described her evolving timetable as a series of flip-flops. Another ACA advocacy group blasted her and Republicans for backing, quote, a sneaky repeal of the health care law. And media commentators have questioned whether she was tricked by GOP leaders. That prompted Collins to complain to D.C. reporters on Tuesday that the press coverage of the tax overhaul has been sexist and ignored other tax-related amendments that she secured in the bill. In a telephone interview, Collins said she's not happy the proposals won't be considered before the end of the year.
The deadline has slipped, which I am disappointed about, but the policy commitments are still there.
But whether the votes are there is another question. Collins says she had a fruitful discussion with House Speaker Paul Ryan. She said he's committed to similar versions of the proposals that she's backing, potentially with more funding. Those proposals could be considered in an omnibus spending bill early next year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Maine law currently prohibits anyone from carrying a firearm onto school grounds, even by accident. But Representative John Martin, a Democrat from Eagle Lake, is proposing a bill that would carve out an exemption to that law, Mal Leary reports.
In rural areas of the state, it's not uncommon for someone to get up long before most people are out of bed to go deer hunting at dawn. Sometimes they'll return home, deer in tow, and pick up their kids to take them to school. But if they forget to take their hunting rifle out of their car or pickup truck, and they drive onto school grounds, they're violating state law. That can result in a fine, even jail time. Representative Martin says that's unfair.
A couple of police officers actually talked to me about it and said, you know, why is the Maine law written the way it is? Because there is a federal exemption.
Martin is talking about the Federal Gun-Free School Zones Act of 1996 that made it against federal law for an adult who is not a member of law enforcement to carry a weapon within 1,000 feet of public, parochial, or private schools. But to be enforced in a state, there must be a companion gun-free school zone law. Martin acknowledges that his proposal is aimed at a problem most likely to occur in rural areas of the state.
And frankly, you know, there aren't many people, frankly, who probably go hunting in the morning in the city of Portland.
In the past, similar legislation has been opposed by the Maine Gun Safety Coalition. And the group's president, Portland attorney Bill Harwood, says they will likely oppose it again, given what they know about the wording of the measure. Harwood says the bill is a solution in search of a problem.
I'm sure if there is an inadvertent violation that the police and the prosecutors will take that into account. But the principle that guns and kids and schools do not mix is really what we should be focusing on.
In addition to his group, Harwood says other past opponents have included the Maine School Boards Association and the Maine School Superintendents Association. He says all schools, whether in a city or in rural areas of the state, should not have to worry about a gun on school grounds for any reason. He says the safety of students should not be sacrificed for the interests of a few.
A very small group who have some minor inconvenience because they have to remember that when they drive onto school property, they should not have possession of a gun or a gun in the car.
But this year, Martin says he has the votes to pass the gun exemption measure. Harwood is skeptical. But one thing is certain, like other gun bills that have been introduced, this one will engender debate and discussion. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
As you do your gift shopping this year, you may find yourself looking at board games, specifically hobby games, which are intended for an older, more strategically minded audience than, say, Candyland. Some might have predicted that the rise of video games would hurt board games, but hobby games, like Settlers of Catan and Pandemic, are growing, and one of the biggest new games comes from right here in Maine. Nora Flaherty has that story.
Back in 2011, Tom DeShane set himself a goal to invent a board game. DeShane is a college administrator and lives in Portland, and he is an avid board gamer.
I really got into board gaming maybe about 10 years or so ago. I have some college friends who invited me to start participating in some of their game nights, and I fell in love with board games. I have about 200 games in my personal game library, but that's really modest for a lot of board gamers, believe it or not.
After some deep thinking and reading some gothic novels, he came up with a concept.
In my game, players are going to be poisoned and they're going to have to venture out and race against the clock to collect the items they need for their antidote and try to get back to the apothecaries before expiring, but they're going to fight wizards and monsters and dragons along the way.
And over the next few years, DeShane spent countless hours and thousands of dollars of his own money on making Quest for the Antidote a reality.
Oh boy, oh boy,
wait, you're so close like I am. Like
I know,
one
I'm
move
so,
off.
I'm so close.
At Rainbow Toys in Falmouth, Addison Maxim, age 9, is learning to play the game. One of the other players rolls what DeShane calls the six-sided movement die, which is a standard die, moves her piece a few spots, and meets a monster.
Look at that one, the vile kitten. That kitten looks pretty scary.
Does
with
he
his
have
mustache.
A mustache?
He sure does.
That's right, the vile kitten. It's one of the strange monsters in Quest for the Antidote. Eventually, the kitten is defeated using a 10-sided battle die.
Yeah, we'll put you on victory lane to remind us that you defeated a monster at the start of your next turn.
Addison, her mom, and her sister are all here, and they're thinking they might pick up the game for Addison's dad for Christmas.
My dad really loves games, so I'm seeing if this would be up his alley, and I think it is so far.
They've always been a staple for us.
But I would say that in the past few years, games have become even more significant in our sales because people are looking for things that the whole family can do together, getting their kids away from screens.
Julie Steinbach is the owner of Rainbow Toys. And it's not just at toy stores that hobby games are growing. It's the industry as a whole. According to ICV2, which tracks numbers for the gaming industry, sales of hobby games have nearly doubled over the last 4 years, $735 million in 2013 to $1.4 billion in 2016. Retailer Bull Moose, which has 9 stores in the state, along with 3 in New Hampshire, has seen a huge surge in sales of games like Quest for the Antidote. The company's Mick Pratt says board games as a whole are
really, really hot right now. I just ran some quick numbers and found that we're up something like 132% in board game sales year over the year. And even if we didn't sell another whole game until 2018, like we sold zero board games between now and then, we'd still be up like 90%.
It's hard to say exactly what's been going on. But Pratt says there seems to be a general consensus that board games bring people together in a way that digital media just can't.
There's a whole social aspect that is really awesome, like, you know, friends and family, board game nights, or you can go to hobby stores and interact with other hobbyists.
Pratt says Quest for the Antidote has been a runaway success, outselling big hitters like Settlers of Catan and Pandemic. He says people like it because it's local. It's even illustrated by a Bangor artist, Scott Sherman. And he says it's just a good game. It's doing well outside Maine, too. And for that, it helps that it's distributed by Upper Deck, a huge company that sells trading cards and games all over the world. So, DeShane says, it's everywhere.
So there are copies of Quest for the Antidote right now that are available in France and Germany and Australia, England, and we have a fan in Lithuania, I just found out just the other night.
If the game does well over time, and DeShane gets lucky, Quest for the Antidote could become its own brand with spin-off games, character toys, and trading cards. But back at Rainbow Toys, 8-year-old Jack Verville of Falmouth is already judging the game a success.
It's pretty cool because you get to battle all these cool legendary monsters that you couldn't battle in real life.
Monsters like the bloated gnome, the jittery skunk, the throttling dwarf, and, of course, the vile kitten. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Nora Flaherty.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Wednesday, December 20th, 2017. Thanks to Erwin Gratz, Fred Bever, Jennifer Mitchell, Susan Sharon, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.